The trial was irretrievably over. Everything that could be said had been said, but he had never doubted that he would lose. The written verdict was handed down at 10 on Friday morning, and all that remained was a summing up from the reporters waiting in the corridor outside the district court. Carl Mikael Blomqvist saw them through the doorway and slowed his step. He had no wish to discuss the verdict, but questions were unavoidable, and he, of all people, knew that they had to be asked and answered. "This is how it is to be a criminal," he thought, "on the other side of the microphone." He straightened up and tried to smile. The reporters gave him friendly, almost embarrassed greetings. "Let's see, Aftonbladet, Expressen, TT Wire Service, TV4, and... where are you from? Oh, yes, Dagens Nyheter." "I must be a celebrity," Blomqvist said. "Give us a soundbite, Kalle Blomqvist." It was a reporter from one of the evening papers. Blomqvist, hearing the nickname, forced himself, as always, not to roll his eyes. Once, when he was 23 and had just started his first summer job as a journalist, Blomqvist had chanced upon a gang which had pulled off 5 bank robberies over the past 2 years. There was no doubt that it was the same gang in every instance. Their trademark was to hold up 2 banks at a time with military precision. They wore masks from Disney World, so inevitably police logic dubbed them the Donald Duck Gang. The newspapers renamed them the Bear Gang, which sounded more sinister, more appropriate to the fact that on 2 occasions they had recklessly fired warning shots and threatened curious passers-by. Their 6th outing was at a bank in Östergötland, at the height of the holiday season. A reporter from the local radio station happened to be in the bank at the time. As soon as the robbers were gone, he went to a public telephone and dictated his story for live broadcast. Blomqvist was spending several days with a girlfriend at her parents' summer cabin near Katrineholm. Exactly why he made the connection he could not explain, even to the police, but as he was listening to the news report, he remembered a group of 4 men in a summer cabin a few hundred feet down the road. He had seen them playing badminton out in the yard. 4 blonde, athletic types in shorts with their shirts off. They were obviously bodybuilders, and there had been something about them that had made him look twice. Maybe it was because the game was being played in blazing sunshine with what he recognised as intensely focused energy. There had been no good reason to suspect them of being the bank robbers, but nevertheless he had gone to a hill overlooking their cabin. It seemed empty. It was about 40 minutes before a Volvo drove up and parked in the yard. The young men got out, in a hurry, and were each carrying a sports bag. So they might have been doing nothing more than coming back from a swim. But one of them returned to the car and took out from the boot something which he hurriedly covered with his jacket. Even from Blomqvist's relatively distant observation post, he could tell that it was a good old AK-4, the rifle that had been his constant companion for the year of his military service. He called the police, and that was the start of a 3-day siege of the cabin, blanket coverage by the media, with Blomqvist in a front-row seat and collecting a gratifyingly large fee from an evening paper. The police set up their headquarters in a caravan in the garden of the cabin where Blomqvist was staying. The fall of the Bear Gang gave him the star billing that launched him as a young journalist. The downside of his celebrity was that the other evening newspaper could not resist using the headline, "Kalle Blomqvist solves the case." The tongue-in-cheek story was written by an older female columnist and contained references to the young detective in Astrid Lindgren's books for children. To make matters worse, the paper had run the story with a grainy photograph of Blomqvist with his mouth half open, even as he raised an index finger to point. It made no difference that Blomqvist had never in life used the name Carl. From that moment on, to his dismay, he was nicknamed Kalle Blomqvist by his peers, an epithet employed with taunting provocation, not unfriendly, but not really friendly either. In spite of his respect for Astrid Lindgren, whose books he loved, he detested the nickname. It took him several years and far weightier journalistic successes before the nickname began to fade, but he still cringed if ever the name was used in his hearing. Right now he achieved a placid smile and said to the reporter from the evening paper, "Oh, come on, think of something yourself. You usually do." His tone was not unpleasant. They all knew each other, more or less, and Blomqvist's most vicious critics had not come that morning. One of the journalists there had at one time worked with him, and at a party some years ago he had nearly succeeded in picking up one of the reporters, the woman from She on TV4.
"You took a real hit in there today,"
said the one from Dagens Nyheter, clearly a young part-timer.
"How does it feel?"
Despite the seriousness of the situation, neither Blomqvist nor the older journalists could help smiling. He exchanged glances with TV4. How does it feel? The half-witted sports reporter shoves his microphone in the face of the breathless athlete on the finishing line. "I could only regret that the court did not come to a different conclusion," he said a bit stuffily.
3 months in jail and 150,000 kroner damages. That's pretty severe," said she from TV4.
"I'll survive."
"Are you going to apologise to Wennerström? Shake his hand?"
"I think not."
"So you still would say that he's a crook?"
Dagens Nyheter. The court had just ruled that Blomqvist had libelled and defamed the financier Hans-Erik Wennerström. The trial was over and he had no plans to appeal. So what would happen if he repeated his claim on the courthouse steps? Blomqvist decided that he did not want to find out.